Off the Ball. GAA.
And any team that has David Clifford, you know, has another chance of winning. You know, I wouldn't have said Zermatt were at a back-to-back level, but they're answering all the questions. They're ticking all the boxes.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Settle in on Off the Ball. Brought to you by Guinness 0.0.
Now then, the Emerald Warriors are Ireland's oldest LGBTQ plus inclusive rugby club. They were founded in 2003 and have since gone from strength to strength. They're just back from the Union Cup in Oslo, where the club's men's plus green team went undefeated to claim the title. Their president is Richie Fagan, who's with us in studio. Richie, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Phil.
And Tabitha Peterkin, who is a coach from the women's plus team, is with us as well. Tabitha, how are you doing?
Great, thank you.
You're from Queensland, as yes. We can automatically decipher from the accent. Why the hell have you made this decision to come here? Everybody's just been sent from Ireland down there.
Yeah, I've done the opposite. My introduction to gay inclusive rugby was interesting. So I was transitioning out of the Australian Defence Force, joined a club in Australia. They were touring to Rome, didn't have a women's team. And I thought, oh, I'd love to travel Europe. Here's a good chance kind of thing. Jumped into the Emerald Warriors in Rome last year at Bingham. Came onto the pitch with the girls, didn't really like, meet anyone. Came on and they were like, oh yeah, can't wait for our first ever scrum. And I was like, oh my goodness, like hold on to me. It was going to be great. Managed to blow up my ankle in the first 20 minutes and said, hey, do you want to coach for the comp? Happy to be here and support everyone kind of thing. And then rest is history. Convinced me to come back, and the joke is I'm the club's souvenir from Rome now. So
we did well.
Jeez, that, yeah. You must have a serious power of persuasion, Richie, to be able to persuade somebody from Australia to come over to Ireland full time.
Oh, well, it's just the power of the membership.
Yeah.
Like, we've such an incredibly diverse, fun bunch that you could not love, you know? So, I mean, the friendships we've made over the years in the club are like incredible friendships, but it's an incredibly special bunch. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, a testament to what they've done in recruiting Tabs to come over and live
for
now
sure.
In Ireland, you know?
So had you gone to Rome just to travel, or had you signed up with a team that weren't the Emerald Warriors?
So I was a part of the Melbourne Chargers, which is another IGR club in Australia. I'd been training and playing with them for a year or two kind of thing, just because I really enjoyed gay and inclusive rugby. Played with a full men's squad with them kind of thing, which was honestly fine. And then came over to Rome with them, and then other women's teams just needed support kind of thing. So you can jump in as individual players at our big international comps kind of thing. So definitely encourage, if anyone's listening, give it a crack, go jump in. All the teams really lovely and stuff. And I just happened to get paired up with the Warriors. And had kind of already planned to travel Europe and then ended up settling down here a bit.
And how's it going for you here?
Fantastic. I'm loving Ireland, actually. I've been pleasantly surprised at how developed the women's comp is in Ireland, to be fair. I think it's incredible to have six divisions is crazy. Plus AIL and AIL Reserve is really good. It gives people a really great entry point for women's rugby. To be fair, I think it's quite hard in Australia. We only have a couple of divisions, if that. So, you know, one of my first games I was playing against Wallaroos.
Right.
Which just got murdered by it, to be honest. So it's great here to be able to have a team like the Warriors and be able to have them in, like, we're in Division 4 at the moment. And it's a really nice entry point for, like, it's still challenging for players that know how to play rugby, but it's also you're not going to die in a game if you're a brand new player as well. So it's a really great, like, intermediate division kind of thing to join. So I love coaching it.
Talk us through the history of the Emerald Warriors, Richie. Founded in 2003. Were you involved from the very beginning?
No, I joined the club 2011,
right.
But 2003, a group of five like-minded individuals came together and you know, pushed to get a full squad together to enter into the Leinster Metro League in 2007 with one team. And fair play, you know, they went on to, you know, with the first of its kind of LGBT plus in the Leinster Metro League, but also in the country, to then build up to where we are today. That was obviously one club 2007 to where we are today, where we've got like four full contact teams. That's three men's plus, one women's plus. With the development of what's going on in the women's plus, I wouldn't be surprised if they've got a second one coming through soon enough. And our non-contact, which we have three non-contact teams, and that's playing throughout the whole year. So it's the growth is now we're nearly, you know, creeping on to close to 250 members this
year. 2011, what were the numbers like?
I remember, one team, probably around 30, 40 members, a deadly bunch, really enthusiastic about bringing in new people and kind of introducing them, everyone to rugby, but also what was really special was kind of, I'll never forget, like even the first tour going away with the club to play in like an IGR tournament, which is, you know, international gay rugby. And, you know, it's Bingham Cup 1 year, Union Cup the next year. So it's either the World kind of Cup of IGR, which is the Bingham, and then the European version, which is Union Cup.
Okay.
The biannual.
So you're now European champions with the Men's Plus team.
Yeah. With our Men's Plus. And it's really important to note that on the four teams that we brought over, our green team were undefeated, phenomenal, and credit to the players and Coach Shane. They've been working really hard for the last number of years to get to this point. And all the other teams, like we've come away from the tournament with results that we've never come away from an IGR tournament before. So more wins under our belt than we've ever had. So a credit to every coaching setup that's in the club that have helped all our teams to reach this point.
And for you in 2011, was getting involved in competitive sport the main appeal for getting involved with the Emerald Warriors, or was it more a gay-inclusive space that appeals to you about the Emerald Warriors?
I suppose it was both, really. Back then, I had a really great bunch of pals or whatever. And I suppose on the gay scene, like we do have a brilliant social life, you know, and I would have played a bit of sport, you know, younger, but I was like, you know, I had a little chat with myself and said, look, I need a new challenge, a new outlet to get back into a sport and kind of, you know, I suppose I would be like, there's stats out there that show that, you know, in the LGBT community where we, you know, we have a brilliant community, but we can sometimes lean into the social side maybe a little bit too much. So this was brilliant to have a new outlet, meeting, you know, new people, but bringing it back into the whole, you know, world of sport and rugby, but, you know, and the benefits of that, you know, being, you know, you're not just your physical, but your mental health as well, you know.
That's such an interesting theme. Tabs, what's been your lived experience of the balance between social and, you know, active well-being, and where that balance has been for you?
Ooh, for me personally, I've always been pretty much a non-drinker anyway,
right,
even in the military, surprisingly enough. It's been fine for me, to be fair. I think rugby for me personally was, I needed the social part of it. When I was leaving the Defence Force, it's definitely really hard to have any kind of social interaction outside of the military, especially when you're deploying, you're moving every year kind of thing. So when I joined like women's rugby in Melbourne, it was great to finally have like friends outside of the military and have that kind of social interaction. And get that like in a healthy environment where you're training, playing games, not necessarily out just drinking kind of thing. So I really enjoyed that part of rugby, being able to do sport and be social without the focus being on alcohol and partying kind of thing.
So you had moved to Melbourne after the army, was it after?
Tricky story. I had started my bachelor's and I was finishing my bachelor's for my last year in Melbourne on like military leave kind of thing. I then transferred to part-time military, did that for 2 years in Melbourne while finishing my degree, playing rugby and coaching swimming as well. So I had a very full year.
So it's rugby union in Melbourne?
Yeah.
Right, not exactly a hotbed of the sport in Australia,
obviously
some avenues.
AFL's huge, obviously, down there. Rugby's definitely a lot quieter. It was just, a girl at a gym said, hey, like, you look kind of fit. Do you want to come play rugby? What do you think? And I was like, oh, I've never really played sports kind of thing. Like, obviously, Army's very, like, either team-based stuff in the sense of, like, PT and stuff at work, or it's, like, individual sports kind of thing, to be fair. So I was like, oh, no, I'll be terrible and stuff. And all the girls are just so friendly kind of thing. Ended up, joining rugby from there.
And that was the first domino that's led you to this studio today. Really interesting story. Just the basics again on Emerald Warriors before we move on to a couple of other things. This is a club for everyone, Richie.
Exactly, yeah. So when we, you know, say we fly the inclusive flag, we, you know, that's when we can proudly say that we've got our Women's Plus team now in the club. We've also, but also with the diversity, diversifying the game or of rugby itself by bringing in the non-contact has brought in a whole new type of membership to the club as well, which is, you know, it's actually proven to maybe be an important feeder system into the full contact. Like we get a lot of people kind of put off by, oh, I don't know if I can get on the pitch and play full contact, but, you know, when they come through our non-contact, it's funny that it's actually having a really positive effect on a nice feeder system into the full contact. But we've, like in the club, we've, like it's not just, I suppose, the gender off, like balance of what we have. We've got so many members from, we've members from South America, South Africa, Australia.
Yeah.
Like the mix is just incredible, what we have in the club. And
like, that's fascinating because, like, I'm sure, Tabs, you've come to realise at this point as well in Ireland that rugby can often be tarred as like an exclusive game. Mm. Not sure what it's like in Australia per se, exactly, where it's such a competition for sport, but certainly in the capital, the sport itself can seem quite middle class and exclusive by its very nature in a traditional sense, certainly for men's rugby players. And inclusive, obviously, is a catch-all term that isn't necessarily going after traditional demographics in terms of wealth or class, but it sounds like it's actually bringing those people in anyway.
This is it. And what's gas is when you're talking about your recruitment story, it's sort of similar to what we do. You know, there's been nights out where, you know, we bump into different people and we're like, you know, they don't even know what we're about, but
like we've always recruiting.
Always recruiting, you know. And we've like, there's a brilliant story from a number of years ago where there was a guy at this, like an afters, you know, and he was kind of in a bad place, you know, and we were listening to him and listening to his story and we really felt sorry for him. And I was kind of saying, like, 7 o'clock Monday, be at this address. And he's like, what do you mean? And I said, bring a pair of runners. And this guy now is like, he's playing on one of our like development teams, but he's doing phenomenally well. It's completely, you know, it's a brilliant case study, but we really are always recruiting and trying to bring more of our community to the game, because the stats around, you know, LGBT plus in competitive sport are quite low. And we really are very passionate about trying to change that to bring more people to the game. But also, kind of, there's a place in the club. It's important to note that it's, you know, if we welcome pavilion members, like people who want to get involved and helping out in the background, you know, who don't feel that they can't get on the pitch, which is fine, you know, but we've a place for everyone, and there's a job, and we've a long list of roles that we need to fill every year in the club as we're growing now into such a big, you know, with 250 members, there's a lot going on.
Imagine being that guy and texting his friends after that, being like, yeah, I ended up at an afters, now I'm a rugby player.
Like, that's got to be how we have half the women's plus team.
Really?
No joke, it's just like, they're so chatty and lovely that we just end up, and everyone's like, oh, I brought my mate and brought this person, met them at the pub the other night, and I'm like, sure. But I think as a coach, it's really rewarding being able to facilitate the inclusion around, especially the women's plus team kind of thing. Rugby is already an intense sport, and it can be a bit intimidating to join kind of thing, but I love being able to facilitate a team that is super supportive and inclusive and stuff. We have a really great mix on the Azuras. We have some trans and non-binary members as well, so it's great that they feel they've got the space to come and play sport kind of thing and have a really supportive team behind them. So I really enjoy that as a coach. I've had other coaches come in for guest spots and they said, wow, like, this team is so lovely. Like, someone just thanked their teammate for a nice pass, and I was like, yeah, they are genuinely like the nicest team to coach. They had a game, they were down some, and had a guest coach in, and they were like, everyone's in such good spirits. Like, everyone's nice, no one's screaming and yelling. I was like, yeah, I couldn't ask for a better team to coach. I genuinely love coaching them. It's fantastic.
So do you then have to be the bad cop in the situation where all the players are too nice?
I think I've done it once. I think I had to be a bad cop once when I knew they could do better, but that's about it. But otherwise, I think everyone's pretty with it kind of thing, yeah.
I did want to ask about some of the other teams in Ireland, likes of Cork Hellhounds, Belfast Aslans. What's the relationship there? Do you hate their guts? It's like, this is our thing, or how do you feel?
Oh, no. We absolutely. It's really important that there are clubs like that to expand the messaging about what we're about. So it's really important that their success is, you know, it's fed into our success. We don't see that as a, you know, as it being taken from our club. But if anything, it's expanding the messaging, which is really important.
Healthy rivalry.
Healthy, yeah. And we've great pals in both those clubs, and we get on very well. And we've seen them over in Oslo.
Yeah, incredible. Yeah,
and they did really well. They've also, you know, come back winning in their tiers, which is really encouraging to see for our small country coming back from Oslo with the win, of course, the Union Cup win for ourselves, but also with all the other teams and clubs doing so well.
For sure. It's really interesting to listen to Tabs speak about not playing sport before and then getting into sport later in life, I think maybe it's fair to say. Yeah. Was that the same for you? Did you play much sport before 2011, before getting involved with the club?
Yeah, I would have played a bit, you know, but I would have shied away then. I would have liked the stats of kind of falling out of sport in my 20s and kind of was later, in my late 20s, coming back to the game.
Why did he fall out of love with it?
I suppose it was probably, you know, me understanding myself and coming out and kind of, you know, going away to kind of understand, kind of coming out and that part of the journey and shine away from what felt like a kind of, it didn't feel like an inclusive type of environment to be in, I suppose. But then in my late 20s, kind of put myself, a challenge to myself to kind of get back involved in a team sport.
Were they rugby environments? Were they
I played some hockey. Rugby, I kind of did feel a bit maybe intimidated by getting in to play the game. And then, you know, I thought, okay, you know, when I seen the Emerald Warriors out and about, and I was like, God, I'm going to give this a go. And that was my introduction to rugby.
Yeah, because it is the tag that we often associate with it, even still to this day, the idea that coming out, certainly in a male sporting environment, is a really tricky and really intimidating place to be. And I can only imagine prior to 2011, it's doubly the case.
Yeah, and I suppose look at us now. I mean, we've a long way to go, but isn't it really encouraging to see what's going on with the likes of, you know, Nick McCarthy coming out, Jack Dunn, and like that ripple effect from that alone to the younger generation is really positive. But also, I suppose the work we've been doing, and we're very passionate about being the voice of diversity and inclusion. And, you know, this year, you know, our Vice President Bernard has put a huge amount of work in with some of the members who've come forward as volunteers. And we've tied in with Belong To on the Stand Up Week, and we've gone into schools to speak about, you know, players have gone in to speak about their journey, the positive effect of what the club has had for them. We're doing that now. That's the second year we've done it.
What's the feedback been like to that?
Oh, it's been incredible.
Yeah, like, fantastic.
Yeah, unreal. Yeah. Like the schools that have been in touch to say that, you know, the positive effect that's happened, and even trying to book us in for the next year.
Really?
So I think the reach we would have had, and like, let's say we reached maybe 1,500 pupils a lot, like, the first year we did it.
Yeah.
We've nearly doubled that last year on the reach, and it's had quite a demand on the club as a group of volunteers, but it's working really well. So that in as well, like, if you can't see it, you can't be it, you know? So it's really important that we're, you know, adding to changing perceptions around what is LGBT in sport. But also, like, the work that's really encouraging to see now with the IRFU and Leinster Rugby, you know, very passionate about, you know, their spirit of rugby and bringing that forward as to all the facets of, you know, inclusivity, you know, from visually impaired right the way through to LGBT. You know, I'm being very lucky to be invited on to work on the new Leinster Speedy Group, which is, you know, spirit of rugby with EDI. And we're, you know, coming up with a plan for the next 3 years. We're, you know, figuring that we've put a lot of work into how we're going to put KPIs around that, but it's everything about educating all grassroots clubs around, you know, even the use of proper terminology, language for minority groups, but also making sure that the women's game is sustainable, where the growth is going to, you know, needs to be, and what needs to be done to keep women in sport.
On this morning's Off The Ball breakfast,
we had this.
When it's 15 on 14 for 55 odd minutes of a game, and for Dublin to, you know, out-tackle us, to outscore us, they had more opportunities to score, 15 against 14. I don't think any Limerick player would stand up and say that was, you know, we lost admirably.
And we also had this.
A fella sent me a message on LinkedIn that still had the AI ChatGPT prompt at the end of it. Would I like my abuse more formal or conversational? So, like... This stuff is abroad, you know, it comes on a spectrum, you know what I mean? Like, just because somebody is critical doesn't mean you have to listen to it.
You can catch everything from this morning's Off The Ball breakfast elsewhere on the Go Loud app and every weekday morning from 7:30.
And that is the other aspect of this. Like, Tavs, I'm sure there's plenty that you've heard there that you want to come in on, like whether it's the educational piece or trying to work with Leinster Rugby, or also just trying to increase the participation of women in sport. What have you witnessed from being on the ground here in Ireland so far?
I think there is an interesting gap, especially because a lot of women are joining later in life. Maybe not more so now, but I guess when I started playing rugby, a lot of women are joining in their 20s, 30s. I think I've seen people join in their 40s, which is really brave. I think it was interesting too, because I think a lot of the coaching stuff still is really aimed at your coaching people that learn how to play rugby. When I did my coaching course, it was me and one other girl on the course out of about 40 of us, I think. And then a lot of the drills and stuff, they're like, oh, would you use this? And I was like, no. And they're like, who are you coaching? I was like, oh, a team of people that have played for like 6 months. To be fair, when I started coaching the Warriors, I think most of the women's plus team had played not even a year yet. I had one or two that had, but so a lot of the coach stuff, I was like, oh, this is great to know, but like a lot of it was aimed at guys coaching men's squads that had already been playing their whole life kind of thing. Like, I'm talking about, I'm teaching like tackling, passing from scratch, like scrums from scratch, all that kind of stuff that I was like, I think the first drill was like a massive like open gameplay drill with like three teams switching. I was like, I'm not using that anytime soon. They were like, oh, and I was like, yeah, like just a different kind of coaching. I'd have definitely seen other coaches come in to coach women's or gay and inclusive rugby and really struggle because they just go, oh, you know, and people go, I have no idea what you're talking about kind of thing, versus coaching men that have played their whole life kind of thing. It's a very different dynamic to approach as a coach.
There's a balance to be struck there between the people with loads and loads of experience and people who are trying to keep in the game.
Definitely. And the great thing about the Warriors, especially that we have the three men's squads pretty much, is you can kind of work your way through, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
The women's squad, I think we found a nice balance of trying to challenge our experienced players and still including our newer players kind of thing, which has come into the discussion of, do we start looking at our second women's plus squad, which is fantastic to have that. Our numbers have gone through the roof for the women's plus side of the club. I think at training last year, they were having like 6 to 10, and now we're getting up to like nearly 30, like 26 about every session kind of thing. So that's fantastic. See those numbers come through.
And as Tob said there, like, you know, in the club, we do believe we definitely have a place for everyone, even on their, where they are in rugby, in their rugby career. Like we've been able to, we've attracted amazing players that are playing, let's say on our green team or on our first team, coming through on our development team. And then we've players who've never played before, and we're bringing them through like our pathway to get them even, it's brilliant to see some of them are even making it onto our green team squad.
Yeah,
it's really, really good stuff. I should say you are listening to Richie Fagan and Tabitha Peterkin here with us on Settle In, and that's brought to you by Guinness 00. You mentioned the team is playing in the Leinster Senior League.
Leinster Metro League.
Leinster Metro League. I presume the reception has been like open armed. This is fantastic to have this team involved in the Leinster Metro League. Or has it? Like, has it always come pretty easily to the team since you've joined in 2011, or what's the experience been?
It's been hugely positive, and we have built up incredible friendships within, you know, clubs that we've played against, and they love to see us coming. Absolutely, there's no getting away from. We've had some the odd, strange experience. I suppose coming out of the pandemic, maybe we had one or two encounters that were very odd, but what was really reassuring was the reaction from the branch and, you know, the real zero tolerance to any sort of homophobic slurring or, you know, there just was no concern there that we weren't being heard or this wasn't going to be acted on. It was really reassuring.
Do you mind if I ask what the odd occurrences were?
Like, you might get, you know, an opposition with some homophobic slurring, but it's, you know, not accepted, not tolerated. That's probably the only experience we've had, you know, is probably coming out of the pandemic. But it's been hugely positive. It's funny, we've had squad or teams in the Metro League that would never cancel or concede a match against us. You know, they'd always find a way to have players to play against us. They'd only be bet by us. But now it's funny, like it's to see the progression and the development of the club and these teams, in particular a green team who've, you know, a lot of clubs literally fear coming up against now, you know. Overall, it's been hugely positive.
Yeah, you're basically hammering teams is what you're saying at this point. Got to that stage. Well, you'd imagine that there was slurs on the pitch. It's not just your team, it's that player or those players' teammates who'd also find that, you use the word odd, you can use a lot stronger language to describe that, but you'd imagine it'd be called out by their own teammates.
It has been, in fairness, like, you know, what has been good to see is that, you know, they would come in, meet us afterwards and say, like, they've pulled up their teammate and themselves and
really?
To kind of cop on. Yeah, that's been really, you know, really positive to see that they've been pulling up their teammate for that type of behaviour and saying it's not acceptable, you know, which is the right thing. It's great to see that, you know, that definitely there's progress being made there, you know.
Is it desperately sexist of me to suggest that the women's game doesn't come with the same set of issues, Tabitha, or what's been your lived experience?
Here in Ireland, not at all. In Australia, I have had issues before. Fine in my own club, but when you start playing like rep squads and stuff where you mix with other players and stuff, I had some interesting interactions. Yeah, I went on a tour for some rep rugby in Australia and had, my roommate move out in like under 5 minutes, came back and they were gone, and throughout the tour made comments, yeah, that were pretty homophobic outright, to be honest. Had it here and there in rugby in Australia, which is one of my pushes to join the Melbourne Chargers, was just I wanted to be a part of a club that really wanted to support women and gay and inclusive rugby. And the Chargers were absolutely like, I said, hey, I know you don't have any women's players right now. Would you? And they said, oh, absolutely. Like, get in here. If you're happy to train with like mixed, go for it kind of thing. So that was phenomenal to join a club for that. And then I've just been really behind IGR rugby ever since. I love it. I love the community. I love the support kind of thing. And it is great not having to worry about that, to be fair. Like, and yes, like you said, like in women's rugby typically isn't an issue, to be fair. I'd say most teams in Ireland are probably going to have a lot of queer women on them. You'd be hard-pressed to find one that didn't, to be fair. But you do get like the odd comment here and there in sports, unfortunately, kind of thing. But yeah, so it's great to be able to coach in a team that we're like, you don't have to worry about that. And even if people have recently come out and stuff, you don't want to have to join sport and then have to worry about that potentially being an issue kind of thing. I know the men's game is definitely much harder, though. I know definitely in Australia, our men's club had some... yeah, interesting slurs on the pitch, let's put it that way.
Yeah, it's felt like that period of coming out and players dropping away from sport does seem to be a real theme, especially amongst Irish men. Like, you look at Kevin Penrose, the GAA player. He says that more players coming out would transform lads' culture in the GAA, and he actually quit playing for his club when he was coming out and was persuaded by one of his teammates to come back in. And interestingly, we actually had David Goff on as part of Settle In a couple of months ago as well. And he was working on this documentary about diversity and inclusion in sport. And he said he reached out to members of the sports community across sports, high profile sporting people in Gaelic games, rugby, soccer and athletics. And he really found it an issue to try and get people to come on the record and to talk about their own experiences or to talk about maybe their lack of experiences and just to normalise the conversation. And he was astonished by how problematic it was for him to find voices with gravitas. Does that surprise you?
No, it doesn't. I suppose, you know, we're quite a conservative bunch or country in a way. Still, yeah. But I think, you know, looking at what's going to happen now with the likes of the Spirit of Rugby when the RFU and the Speedy Group within Leinster, and there is this big push now to try and... they understand that there is an issue in the stats and why, you know, even... young LGBT is falling away from sport, but also girls falling out of sport, and there's a job to be done. You know, we've been preaching this for a number of years that, you know, it's happening. Things are moving, albeit that they may seem a bit slow. Things are changing, which so I can just speak from experience, from what I'm experiencing at the moment. I feel like we're entering a new phase in a positive way, where they understand that we need to change how the environment of these clubs and the environment that they set, you know, because it is all to do with environment, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we know David's done a lot with us and he does some phenomenal work. I do think we're about to enter a new era, and that we're, you know, really, we're as a club, we're very passionate about trying to change, as I said, what is perceptions around LGBT in sport. The messaging that we've been pushing out, we can't do it alone. Like, we've phenomenal allies in the club that have really helped us with that messaging. So we're really hopeful that we're heading in. I suppose it's also important to know, like, in a world that's kind of regressing, you know.
That's the thing, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's so important that we're now, as a small country, pushing through to try and change.
When you use the world is regressing, we all have our own picture of what that means to us. I see you nodding along there, Tabs. What does the world is regressing mean to you?
I think we've come a long way, but I think we have a long way to go. I think the biggest issue now, especially in women's sport, is trans players, which I think has been phenomenally blown out of proportion. Like, as someone who has played men's rugby, like, God, I've been hit harder by women. Like, getting tackled by, people that have played for Wallaroos, I get to train against some of the girls and have played against girls that have Irish caps here. Fuck, they hit harder than any lad I'm going to play against, to be fair, when I play men's rugby kind of thing. So I think it is ridiculous to come out and say that, like, trans players have this, like, massive issue with, like, rugby's a tough sport, you know what I mean? I think especially in Ireland, where you've got such a massive divisional system, especially in, like, the women's plus category kind of thing, I don't really see, like, if you're that good of a player, just level up, you know what I mean? Like, I just think it's a bit dramatic. For I think there is, as far as I'm aware, two players that have been excluded because of the ban on trans players. And that were playing like Div 4 and 5 kind of thing. You know what I mean? It just seems like it's really been blown out, way out of proportion. It is great on the Warriors being able to really support our trans non-binary players and play with them on tour kind of thing. Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing for the Warriors, being able to support those members of our community the most right now.
It's amazing, making an example of two participants.
Yeah.
Did you know the two players?
I know one of them. I've met one of them personally. The other one I haven't met.
And how are they now?
Fine. Both obviously not playing. One of them I know is still playing Gar. But yeah, it's unfortunate we can't have them playing here in Ireland at the moment for rugby. But we obviously can have them play with us on tour for our Bingham and Union Cup, which is phenomenal.
Because that's exactly where my mind went as well when you talked about the regression of society as well. For you, what are you thinking?
Well, it's all about education, right? And we're really trying to work with the Federation, work with the branch to kind of put more into education around our community and even the minority group that is in our community. Mm. Yet we have had a setback for sure, and we have a seat at the table, so we have a voice. So it is our job to try and bring people along on a journey for sure. Yeah, it is, you know, I suppose, hopefully I'm not being too naive here, but I do think we are in a better position now with the work that we're doing in the background to hopefully make better progress in this whole area. I mean, it's interesting, the match we had over in Oslo, we had some of our women's plus team come to play on our men's plus team because we were with so many injuries, et cetera. And I was lucky enough and privileged enough to have some of you guys play with me on that team. It was what an experience. It was just phenomenal.
Great.
It was such a highlight.
I saw that perception like it was crazy. So it was in the Division 4 men's for Union. And yeah, we had one of our players going in as front row. She's experienced, she's done it plenty before kind of thing. And there were on the same page guys that had never played before. And the ref was like, oh, but a woman. And we're like, oh my goodness. I'm like, she was fine the whole game. Same thing when I played men's in Australia, the opposition were like, oh, like I played prop, and they're like, oh, we're really worried about her. And my coach was like, we have seven guys that have never played. They're like, she's fine. Like, don't worry about that. It is like, I think rugby should be looked at as like skill-based, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think regardless of gender, like your tackle technique, your rugby IQ is going to matter way more than any kind of gender issue on the pitch, to be fair. Like I said before, yeah, getting hit by people that are playing at international level, oh, I'd rather tackle a bus, like, to be fair. So I find it crazy that this, like, massive, like, risk of trans players have been blown up so much.
But there is, we are trying to pilot a game, and we've been talking with the RFU about, like, a trans game. We were hoping to do it for this summer, but we've been unable to get it. But we will hopefully next year. We have coming up on the 19th of July our Pride Blitz, you know, and that's it, you know, in collaboration with Leinster and the RFU. And we're kind of inviting everyone, you know, check it out on our social media to, you know, maybe on you guys off the ball could enter a team or news talk.
Absolutely.
You know, but we're asking all our stakeholders, like even we're asking our friends in Guinness and friends of the bank and every bank of Ireland to put a team in. And it's a fun day just to, but not contact on the 19th of July. But they're, you know, it's interesting. They're open to this game. And it was piloted in Oslo. You know, we did.
Yeah, in Bingham last year as well.
Bingham last year, and it worked out really, really well.
Yeah.
And
the biggest game last year in Bingham was the trans match. I think we would have had thousands there watching it, to be fair. It was definitely the exhibition match of the tournament kind of thing.
Because you see the transgender policy from the IRFU in 2022, and, you know, you think to yourself, wow, the countless of lives that, you know, that are changing, all these evil people that they're excluding from the sport, and there's two people.
It's crazy. Like,
and then from what you've just said there, you get the sense that maybe the IRFU, to a large degree, their heart is in the right place, and they are willing to listen and willing to change with the times. Is that fair to say, or do they still have a lot of work to do?
Oh no, they're definitely willing to listen, and you know, the working groups we've been on, like I've been in a workshop with them once a month for the last 10 months, and that's been really interesting.
Right.
But they've been really receptive to kind of what we, you know, what we're trying to do. It's interesting that they came to us going, look, there's, you know, this idea that we could pilot. So it looks, there's a bit of work to be done, but it's great that we're having such great dialogue and that we've been invited to have a seat at the table, which is really important, you know.
Yeah. There's a lot of work to be done,
but I know with that setback, but we're, you know, we're willing to get involved and hopefully move it in the right direction.
Mm. Even barriers you wouldn't think of, like the craziest issue we've had with our trans non-binary players at the moment on the Women's Plus squad is like the sign-up issue. So like when you sign up playing rugby here, it asks you like the gender you were born at birth, and then it asks you if you identify as being trans non-binary, and then it just won't let you sign up. So even if you select you were born female at birth,
no.
And then you put that you're non-binary, it just then rejects it. And it's like, so to be fair, I did get invited to chat to the youth council, and they put that forward to Leinster, I'm pretty sure, to try and fix that kind of thing. But just stuff you wouldn't think of, like if just signing up is like an issue kind of thing. So, and I think, I know I've spoken to them and they said, yep, a couple of the teams have brought it up, but they only have like one or two trans or non-binary players, whereas like, well, I'd have a fair few, to be fair, players identify as being non-binary kind of thing, so we get it a fair bit as like an issue for players signing up kind of thing, so.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds optimistic, for sure, and like, I know a lot has been said and a lot of broadcasting has happened this year around, you know, 10 years on for marriage equality, but
yep.
It really just sticks in my head the example you brought, like post-COVID, the anecdotal evidence that progress isn't always a straight line,
yeah.
And maybe 10 years on, things maybe haven't progressed as far as possible, and maybe it's because everybody becomes a hermit and is, lots of things happen over the course of those few years. But I guess maybe in general, in any era, progress is always going to be hard to be linear, right?
Exactly, yeah. And like we're always preaching in the background with our members, we're always saying you have to be, you know, the role models you never had, and you have to be, you know, we're, you know, positive ambassadors within the community, but also within the general public, and to keep pushing things forward. And it's interesting you say that, like we've had friends recently talk about, you know, 10 years on that, you know, even this year they'll struggle, same-sex couples to wear, hold hands in the city, you know, which is, you know, quite regressive compared to, you know, they would have coming out of marriage equality, coming out of 2015, 16, 17, been comfortable to do that.
Yeah.
So, you know, and even, you know, we've one of our teammates, if you think about it, like that was attacked outside the George and Georgia Street there in 22, which was, you know, unprovoked attack, you know, I don't think they've ever got that guy who, you know, he did a lot of damage to our non-contact player. So, you know, we're acutely aware that we're not where we need to be, for sure. But we just need to keep banging our drum and making sure that everyone is on the same hymn sheet in the club on getting the right messaging out there.
What's the plan for Saturday? You marching?
Oh, I've got huge plans for Saturday. Yes, marching. Marching on Saturday.
Oh, we're absolutely buzzing. We can't wait to be with our teammates and our whole club who is so involved in bringing us to this monumental milestone. It's going to be like, what a buzz to be able to walk through the city with, you know, our trophy.
Yeah,
absolutely. Because it's been a long time coming, and, you know, it's really important that we even remember the members that were in the club before us, before my time, because they're a hugely important part of where we are today.
Yeah.
So very excited to march on Saturday.
Have a great weekend. And it sounds like July 19 is going to be a great event as well. Tabitha, Richie, a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks so much,
John.
Cheers.
Settle in on Off the Ball, brought to you by Guinness 0.0.